Oxygen number 12693, reel 4.
Mr. Green, reel 4. Your sentence was not quite finished off.
Oh, I think we were talking about whether these theatrical groups or the Chinese theatre were before VJ Day or after, mainly after, but I do remember going to some in Burma, and I was only in Burma before VJ Day, so it must have been before the end. And the Malayan People's Anti-Japanese Army had this kind of double relationship with the Allied forces, and some places they were quite friendly and worked in unity with the British and perhaps to some extent with the Americans in North Burma. But in some areas there was a certain amount of hostility, particularly over two issues. One, the treatment of the Japanese, which the MPAJA saw as being very soft. You know, they wanted the Japanese soldiers, prisoners, to be given political re-education as they would have had in China, whereas the military, British military authorities didn't go along with that. And also, to some extent, the British authorities, observing Geneva Conventions or whatever, treated high-ranking Japanese officers as officers and wanted everybody to salute them and so on and so forth, which wasn't very popular with the Malayans, with the Malayan communists, and it wasn't all that popular with British soldiers either.
But which organisation in Burma was putting on the drama performances?
Well, they were, I believe, Chinese members more of the Malayan People's Anti-Japanese Army, because in that there were
Malayan... But it could have been Malayan people.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were a bit different from the things I saw later on in Malaya. But again, from the talks we had with Burmese communists, they said, yes, the Chinese were quite strong in the guerrilla resistance, but it wasn't just Chinese. There were plenty of Malays. One of the propaganda points there, of course, was that the Chinese were infiltrators. They came from outside. The Burmese were pro-British, in the same way that the Malays were pro-British and the Chinese were compradores or infiltrators, the same kind of stirring up as went on in Northern Ireland between Catholic and Protestant, or Cyprus between Turks and Cypriots. But, I mean, it all seemed to me much of a piece. It's these falsetto acting voices and the singing and the garish makeup. They're very powerful and dramatic things, although you thought, oh, this is all kind of phony in a way and over theatrical. It was electrifying when the action came and the hero defied the Japanese sword and whatever. You know, you remembered, I can remember seeing a scene where a Chinese patriot, presumably a communist, the two things were presented almost as identical, being beheaded by Japanese, and thinking of that terrible, terrible photograph of the American airmen with their faces bound with a gag and the sword being raised to decapitate them. And in that stage, the drama stopped being something that you looked at from outside and became something that really happened and could happen to you or anybody else there.
What was this contact you had with the rubber workers' strike?
Well, again, that was, you know, the Malayan communists were active in organising that. In a sense, it wasn't just a strike, I suppose. It was more a protest against the conditions that they were working under. At the end of the war and the Japanese surrender, the Malayan rubber workers must have assumed that life was immediately going to be a bit better, that their wages possibly and the food they got were going to be a bit better, and they found that this wasn't so. And so they took some kind of action. They marched about, and it was mentioned in the kind of crude newspapers that they produced, remembering that newsprint was terribly scarce. And of course the British military forces moved in on this, and the left, both in the Malaya, among the Malayans, and among the lefts in the British Army, weren't very happy about this. I think that one soldier got in touch with not Michael Foot, one of the Labour MPs, Frank Owen, who started a Forces newspaper in Singapore, and told him a bit about this. In a sense, it was more a lockout. Dunlop and the others, I believe, said to the workers, well, you know, you're not going to work for us until you accept these conditions, which were as bad, if not worse, than under the Japanese.
Did you personally get involved in it?
No, not really. I mean, I stood on the fringe of open air meetings and outside Kuala Lumpur and spoke to Malayan communists I knew, but they were always advising us to be careful and not to run risks, and you know, telling us that it wouldn't help them all that much if British service personnel were sent to prison. And they said, you know, don't think that you'll be able to fly home and speak at Hyde Park Corner, Trafalgar Square about this. You won't be able to speak about it for a long time. But you know, we heard and we saw and we put two and two together and we discussed it. And they had slogans in crude English. And of course, I've read the book since and find that in fact there were these strikes, and they were condemned by the military authorities as politically inspired, which presumably was an excuse for not listening to the strikers. And I gather that they did in fact have their wages reduced again later on, I think sometime in 1946.